whether or not Secretary Gates stays, and I hope he stays, how long Ash Carter and how much oomph he puts behind these initiatives, that's going to be a big deal. But if you look at the potential for the change in behavior, how the government does business, how the Defense Department chooses its contractors, how it structures its contracts, how it deals with profit policy, how it deals with the time value of money, these are huge issues that could really shake the landscape in the future.
Part of the issue here is that if you really want to have savings, guess what? You have to stop doing something.
When it's all said and done, if we want savings, this is a requirements issue. The contracting community doesn't set the requirements. They don't decide whether we're going to go to war. They don't decide whether we're going to try to cure cancer. They don't decide how important food safety is. All they do is they take requirements from the program shop and they go out and try to get value for money. Everyone understands that if we're going to do something about the deficit and the debt, we have to stop buying things we don't need or buy less of the things that we think we need and do so more efficiently. The procurement savings are going to be at the margin. The challenge, however, is at a much higher level than the procurement organization. These are cabinet-level decisions. What missions don't we need to fund anymore? That's going to be a challenge.
And those are the difficult decisions to make about, okay, we're going to do this, we're not going to do that.
Absolutely, and I can't give you a better example. Secretary Gates, when he was rolling out the efficiency initiatives, one of the first things he did was touted canceling the presidential helicopter. But let's be honest, we're going to buy a new presidential helicopter. And the new presidential helicopter, particularly when you include the termination costs, is going to cost more than the original one. Now, we've kicked that can down the street, and for most consumers, if you defer a cost, that's a cost savings. The longer you drive your car, as long as it doesn't have tremendous repair bills, the more you're saving money. But that's different with regard to missions. If the agencies have missions they need to fulfill, we're going to spend that money eventually. It may deal with short-term deficits in our silly annual budget cycle, but it won't do anything about the national debt.
Now, Secretary Gates always talks about that we're not cutting $100 billion, we're shifting it from back-end stuff to war fighters. How important is that? It seems like in this age of austerity, at some point, they're going to have to cut as well.
Right. I don't think there's any question about that. So let's look at this from a couple standpoints. We have to support the warfighter if we're going to be continually engaged in violent activity abroad. No one believes that we're not going to spend that money. In fact, I can't give you any better example. As absurd as it was that we froze federal pay, they didn't freeze the pay for the military. That just shows you that that's something that we will continue to fund. But one of the realities is that one of the main reasons that we have military superiority is we have the technical advantage on the battlefield. We must continue to invest in high-end technology and hardware. Now, some of the things that we buy today are much less expensive than the things they replace. A UAV, an unmanned aerial vehicle, is much less expensive not only to build but to operate than a fighter aircraft. So we may change the way we spend money, and I applaud them for thinking about those trade-offs. But we're not going to stop investing in high-end major systems.
The big announcement about the IT management reforms, part of it acquisition-based. First off, put that in context of big stories of the year, but also talk a little bit about how important these provisions actually are.
Well, it's important if we actually change behavior. So that's easy. The question will and can we change behavior? I think that a lot of the individual things that are discussed in the great big list that Kunda rolled out yesterday are terrific. But one of the things that we heard Dan Gordon talk about today, this is all about communication. If you want the IT community to serve the government better, we need better upfront communication. If the government understands what it needs, what its needs are, and how to frame those requirements, they won't spend money on things they don't need. And realistically assessing the marketplace is important. So look, down the road, do any of us know whether cloud computing is going to save money or cost more money and give us better service? I can't answer that question today. It may be that we will get real efficiencies, but we are going to evolve. The government has wonderful IT services day in and day out, but there are going to be significant investments, and how we go about dealing with not only the contracts but how we manage those contracts, that's where the real changes will take place over time.
And a lot of discussion here, and I hear it out there as well, about even, hold on, can government and contractors talk to each other occasionally? Why wouldn't you talk to somebody who you're going to invest a lot of money with?
I was ecstatic to hear Dan Gordon talk earlier today about myth busting. If there's no greater myth that's need to be busted, that the government customer shouldn't be talking to the private sector. It's wrong-headed, it's short-sighted, and it is not calculated to either get value for money or customer satisfaction. It's tremendously important. Look, since the 1990s, we tried to bang the drum on oral presentations so that the contractor community could actually speak with the requirements generators. But this is so important. Why would you ever go out and buy something without doing market research and asking intelligent questions first? The more the government speaks to the contractor community, it's a win-win for everybody. More value for money, more customer satisfaction. I think it's imperative.
What does the age of austerity mean in a procurement world?
The bottom line is we don't know yet. The greatest fear, the single greatest short-term and long-term fear, is that we won't continue to fund the resurgence of the acquisition workforce. It took us almost 20 years to gut the acquisition workforce. We cut the people. We didn't invest in training. We weren't part of the evolution in how the government did business.
The last time we did, age of austerity, better, faster, cheaper, we just did it cheaper without focusing on the better and faster.
Right, so 1989 till the mid-2000s, we didn't invest in the workforce, and that was a bad idea. Now we're seeing the investment. We're seeing people hiring. We're seeing innovations in training. But look, when you're freezing federal pay, and the odds are we're going to have a freeze on hiring too, you have to be worried that the government won't make good on its promise to revitalize the acquisition workforce. If we don't do that, we can't fix anything in procurement.
And it's part of this understanding that if you're not investing there and spending time and effort at the beginning, there's no way that a project is going to be successful in the end.
Absolutely. There's two ways to look at this. The easy one, let's remember what we learned in kindergarten. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You can go out and hire all the auditors you want, all the inspector generals and all the prosecutors, and all they can do is basically try to right the wrongs that were done. But wouldn't it make more sense to proactively avoid those problems in the first place? Let's get talented business professionals to come in and make good business judgments that are focused on getting the government managers the things that they need to perform their government missions. Let's get them for good prices, and let's get good customer service. That's how we're going to be better in the future.
Often my concern is that we do these across-the-board cuts. It's what we did back in the Clinton years. And without what we were talking about earlier, figuring out, hold on, where do we want to spend time, energy, effort? And that requires making these actual choices.
It took a long time, but I think that we have almost universal agreement that the acquisition workforce cuts were ill thought out. I mean, I complained for years that there was no empirical research that supported those cuts, and I think we've seen some of the damage that was done. Having said that, in a time like this, with this economy and the way that government's being perceived, to continue to go out and say, look, we need to hire, remember, what did DOD say? They were going to hire 20,000 new business professionals by 2015. That's a daunting challenge in this market. The great news is, in this market, we're getting amazingly talented people. We're clearly getting overqualified people. Then the question will be, will these people stay in an era where they're not getting pay raises, where they're criticized by the Hill, where they are taught to be risk-averse by weak mentors? We need real leadership here, and that's going to be one of the challenges for all the agencies.
I can't let you get away without talking about the protest environment, and there's a bunch of stories this week, but it's been a story of 2010 where people very concerned that we're going back to the era of where protests all really get in the way of allowing the government to get its job done. Protests gone up, but your thoughts is that this is a little bit of a red herring.
It's absolutely a red herring. Bad information leads to bad conclusions. The first is, if anybody's told you in the last week that we're at some kind of peak in protest, that's just wrong. We have 1,000 protests a year fewer than we had in the early 1990s, and we are spending literally 2 or 3 times as much money. If you try to do a correlation between the increase in procurement spending in the last decade and the increase in protests, you will see there is almost no correlation. The amount of money we spent in procurement went up at 5 times the rate of inflation in the last decade. We didn't see that kind of an increase in protests. Statistically, the number of procurements that are protested are 0. They are statistically insignificant. The odds of a protest, particularly the odds of a successful protest, as Dan Gordon said, it's like being hit by lightning. But more importantly, if we don't stick with this deputization of the oversight function to the private sector, you have to come up with an alternative. And I believe deeply, I believe intellectually, and I believe in every conceivable way that more auditors and inspector generals aren't the solution. The beauty of protests is it is a focused, deputized oversight regime. It puts the people who care the most about the outcomes in the position to basically challenge government behavior when it goes awry, and it's transparent, and we can learn from the outcomes. It's a great system. Don't buy the hype that we've got a problem. We don't have a problem.
So what are you going to be watching for in 2011? What will be your sign? What are you looking for? I'm not going to ask you a crystal ball because we tend to always – then people play this back and we'll say, oh, look, he wasn't right. But what are you going to watch?
The DOD cost-cutting initiatives will be significant. So the two big things, what on the list of the suggestions from DOD will actually be implemented? And at the same time, the big one, the ultimate issue for all of us is, will the agencies make good on their promise to reinvest in the acquisition workforce? Without people, we can't succeed.